Hey everybody, Stu Smith going live. Happy Monday to you and happy first day of the spring workout cycle that we are doing here in Maryland. Beautiful morning, nice and sunny, a little chilly, about 45 degrees, but it's a lot warmer than it has been. Spring is coming, at least the temperatures are. But anyway, what that means is it changes the way we train. We are now focusing on building up our calisthenics and cardio while maintaining some of those winter lift cycles. Winter lift progress during our winter lift cycle. And it's just one of my favorite workouts. I would say today's workout is probably one of my favorites, and it's the very first workout in that spring seasonal tactical fitness periodization program, which I put a link to in the description, but I'll put a link to in the comments here. You can see it if you open up this. It's one of the first books in there. And my favorite workout looks like this. It is basically a mile warm-up jog. You do the classic PT pyramid, which goes from 1 to 10. And it's pull-ups times 1, push-ups times 2, sit-ups times 3, dips times 1. And you run. You got a choice. You can run a quarter mile every set or 800 every odd set. So you get about the same amount of 2.5 miles plus that 1 mile warm up. So 3.5 miles total with, you know, working your way up the pyramid with calisthenics. Then on the way down, you work your way with weights on the way down or weighted vest. So it's weighted pull ups, it's bench press instead of push ups, military press instead of dips. And you don't run. You're just kind of resting. You can do some plank poses in there as a rest. And then you go for a swim, which is the classic 50-50 swim workout. And I have somebody doing this swim workout challenge that I just created the other day. And you guys are free to try it out. And I will put a link to the 50-50 if you're not familiar with the 50-50 swim workout. If you're kind of new to the program, check out this link in here. And you'll see the 50-50 workout. So it's 50. It's a warm-up with a 500-yard swim. It's 10 sets of 50-meter freestyle followed by 50-meter CSS. So for a total of 1,500 meters or yards, depending on your pool length. And what I challenge this guy to do, and I challenge all of you guys to do this, if you're having problems with swim conditioning, like if you've gotten your stroke down, you can do a 50-second 50, you know, pretty efficiently. You just now need to get in shape to swim better, swim faster. Try this. 5 days a week, do the 50-50. And in 3 weeks, let me know how you do. So it is definitely 15 swim workouts. So after 15 swim workouts, I am curious how you do, because that seems to be the magic number with people going from like a 10-minute swim to close to 8:30. We even had one guy break 8 in 3 weeks. And in 4 weeks, we had several guys breaking 8. So between 15 and 20 swim workouts, you can go from a 10-minute swim to a 10-minute swim to a 8-minute swim. 15 to 20 swim workouts. How does that sound? Does that sound better than 3 weeks, 4 weeks? Or, you know, being able to say, all right, I got to do this 15 times and I'm going to see some results. And guess what? It's free. You just got to put in 30 minutes a day to do it. And I promise you, any 15-minute swim workout like this specific one will get you in shape for any 500-yard swim. But this one specifically will definitely get you in shape for the 500-yard swim CSS. All right. So there we go. That's my spring morning, day one of spring training. Just one of my favorites. Let's talk to Jackson here. Jackson asks, ever deal with knee tendonitis? Absolutely. I have it and have a police test in 2 weeks. No squatting or serious bending the knee, so only doing upper body and can't really do cardio. Only thing I could think of is swimming with a buoy between my legs, skip breathing to maintain cardio. Any other suggestions? Yeah, it depends on what type of knee tendonitis you have. Is it IT band? Is it runner's knee? Is it PFS, which is runner's knee? Is it patella tendonitis? Kind of depends. There's some ways to deal with that. And it depends on what it is and how severe it is. Now, I have had some IT band issues where I was able to just foam roll through it. Now, not just foam rolling my IT band, but my thigh, my hamstring, my butt, all those connection areas, calves, everything, foam rolling, stretching was actually quite helpful. Some people say that foam rolling doesn't help, but it will definitely ease the pain of some of those tendonitises, so you can still run. To basically define tendonitis, I have felt it like this. Like, it hurts when I'm sitting down and try to stand up or try to go downstairs. If that hurts, that's typically could be a tendonitis. However, if you go warm it up on a bike and then you go run and nothing hurts while you're running, but then it hurts again after it cools down and you sit down for a while, that hurts, that process hurts when it cools down and gets a little less pliable, that is a pure sign of tendonitis at a mild level. If it's a really bad level, it's going to hurt all the time, and there's not a whole lot you can do but just rest and take some anti-inflammatory medication. But see how biking feels, or elliptical. See how that feels as well, and get after it on those activities. But yeah, you can actually get in really good running shape on a bicycle. You at least keep your legs there, you keep your lungs good, or elliptical. Two of the workouts I like to do is the pyramid, where every minute on the minute I increase the resistance of that machine. Go up to 20, try to come back down. It's like a 40-minute workout, but you can go up by twos and make it a 20-minute workout. But I would suggest somewhere in the middle of that 20 minutes or so, you push really hard for 10 minutes. Maybe warm up for five, that middle 10 minutes be really hard, and the pyramid is, and then that last five is kind of a cool down, because that's going to prepare you for those 10 minutes or so of your mile and a half run, which I'm assuming that's the distance that you're preparing for. The other one is a Tabata interval, where it's a 20-second sprint, 10-second easy. You do that for as long as you run. So I would say between 10 and 15 minutes would be a good way to add that to your workout. But swimming, absolutely. Swimming's great. I don't know if you need a buoy between your legs, as long as you're doing freestyle, your legs are straight anyway. You're just flutter kicking. I wouldn't do a big scissor kick or a breaststroke kick where you have to bend your knees. Let's see what else. If you got any more feedback on what type of tendonitis that is, Jackson, I might be able to give you some experience that I've dealt with. Just graduated airborne, should be classing up for SFAS either in June or late August. Any recommendations for how I should be periodized, structure my training for the next few months? Yes, your training should look like preparing to get through SFAS. And if there's any fitness tests that you know of that are prior to that, make sure you're maintaining those. Make sure that you are rucking, because you will be rucking. You will be running. Try to get your runs down to like that 7-minute mile pace for anything over 4, 5, 6 miles. Be in that zone. That's going to set you up really well for above average performance. Yeah, that's about it. Rucking. So you might want to lift a little bit if you haven't lifted much in a while, just to get some durability, but don't want to lift too heavy because you're still going to want to run fast and ruck fast. So it's a little mix. I would say the spring training cycle is perfect because it's going to progress you up with a certain amount of running. There's rucking in there. There's a little bit of lifting, but there's just as much calisthenics and cardio in there too. So it's a good all-round program to do that. Now, there is swimming in the spring training cycle. Probably don't need to swim. You can replace that with either more running, or if you need a break from running, you can replace it with some of the bike workouts that I just mentioned for the guy with Jackson with the knee injury. Bike pyramids, Tabata intervals, those are really useful to keep the cardio up, the legs in shape, and the impact down. So that's how I would do it. Do you have any swim workouts with fins that you recommend aside from just long, steady swims? We usually break it up. I mean, you're going to want to do big sets of like 500s with fins. there's one that we also like to do like 5 sets of 300s. Sometimes we even go up to 10 sets of 300s, which that's hard. And those 300s are on a 5-minute goal pace. So you're on kind of like a 6-minute interval. You got 5 minutes to hit that 300, which is 300 yards in 300 seconds, 5 minutes. And you got a minute rest. And you can either spend that rest on the pool side, or you can spend it turtle backing, which is just on your back, you know, for another 50, just nice and easy, kind of catching your breath, flutter kicking. The other one I like to do is kind of a speed workout where we do 75 really fast with fins on. And you can even make one of those underwater and then the middle or the 50 coming back. You know, middle, do the first one, dolphin kick underwater, then do 50 down and back, nice, easy CSS, and then do a 25 turtle back to catch your breath and see if you can actually catch your breath during that turtle back and go back into that dolphin kick underwater, 50 CSS, 25 turtle back. So it's 25 underwater, 50 CSS, 25 turtle back. Do that 10, 15 times. It's a good speed workout for swimming with fins. In fact, I am updating all of my SEAL workouts right now, and that one is in there. The SEAL phase 1, phase 2, 3, and phase 4 are all getting updated right now. In fact, I just got the new covers back from the designer. And they all look pretty good. If you guys haven't seen them, I'll see if I can pull them all up. Let me see. Where are they? I think I have them right here. Oh, boom. Nice. Check these out. So you guys will like these. These are covers. So I actually made them completely different. The workouts have evolved significantly in these phase 1. Phase 2, 3, phase 4 workouts. Phase 1 is kind of a universal PST workout now for SEAL, SWCC, EOD diver, rescue swimmer, and SARC. So if you're one of those Navy PST folks that needs to work on the swim, pull up, push up, sit ups, mile and a half run, but you also have some more challenging events like pool skills, treading water, longer runs, some log PT, bear crawls, stuff like that. All of that's in that phase one, as a focus mainly on the PST, but some introduction to getting through. And I also added a special another 4 weeks to the original. It used to be a 12-week program. Now it's 16. And then those last 4 weeks are really focused on the human performance test that you will see in some of the Navy training pipeline, especially EOD. You may see it somewhere like SQT at the Navy SEAL pipeline, SWIC and others. And it's body weight bench, weighted pull-ups, deadlifts, shuttle runs, speed agility test. Let's see, what else is there? There's a run and a swim. So it's a nice little test. So that answers that question as well, because you'll see that later in your pipeline. And then phase 2-3 I'm working on right now. And this is getting through selection. So think of phase one as being getting to selection. Phase 2-3 is getting through selection. And then phase 4 is a special kind of a phase one BUDS prep workout where it's going to simulate some of those events. And it actually has a Hell Week simulator that, by the way, we are going to do this spring. When some of our guys are going through Hell Week, we're going to do this with them just to kind of give our local guys the taste of it a little bit, where we'll do 3 workouts a day. We still go to sleep at night, though. We're not trying to do any sleep deprivation stuff. And so, for instance, like one of the workouts will be, we get our normal 2-hour workout in the morning. Be a PT, run, swim, then we go eat, and then we go do a ruck right after we eat, just to kind of simulate some load bearing, carrying boats on your heads and, moving around from A to B to C right after we eat. So you're doing it on a full belly. So it's got some really interesting ways, before we do a workout, you're wet and sandy, so it's got some nuances to it that kind of help you understand the discomfort of what's going to happen here one day in your future. Do I have any trap stretches since I feel tight? I always feel tight. Trap stretches. That's a good question. I usually hang or hang this way. Or like lean up, like grab a pole like this and just lean back. That kind of helps stretches the traps a little bit. The TRX kind of relax, lean back with the TRX. Sometimes that can help you. Check out my advice is go to YouTube and see what you see. There may be some more versatile, more useful trap stretches out there than what I do. Pretty much anything that you're doing, you can drop your shoulder, pull that thing down low. That's definitely going to stretch your trap. Yeah, that's a good question. I haven't really thought about it much, but I do feel my traps today because we did the Sam Baby Devil Murph on Saturday, which is a lot of bear crawling. I think that probably got my traps a little bit. Not only my traps, but my upper back rhomboid areas. So, Stu, you touched on this a little before. How much of a difference would prior federal law enforcement SWAT experience make for a guy who requires an age waiver? Provided his PST is on point. Of course. I don't know if it would necessarily make a difference, but it will definitely get your foot in the door having that kind of experience. So I wouldn't discount it, put it that way. You know, because they will take active duty or prior service guys that have that, you know, military experience. Law enforcement experience is very similar. You know, we've had guys, you know, get waivers that were firefighters and EMTs. You know, so I think it all is helpful. So I would say go for it. Depends on what your age waiver is. Like if it's 35, might be a little more challenging. But the Air Force would take you, probably. So 50-50, got him sub 8. Nice. No prior swim experience. Back then, I thought I was going to go Navy the other year. Yeah, man, I tell you, that's a good swim. 50-50 is legit, man. I tell you. You just got to be consistent with it. Next thing you know, you've accumulated 10, 15, 20 actual workouts in a month, and you will see gains, I promise you. It's just that effective. It's so effective that I spit it out there for free just to let everybody know this will help you. You don't even have to buy anything to do it, but it is also in these programs significantly. And it evolves too. So it also progresses in these programs where there'll be like 100 free 50 CSS, or we'll flip it and we'll do 50 free 100 CSS. You know, for 10 sets. We'll do 75 75s for 10 sets, or 100 hundreds for 10 sets. And everything just kind of progresses throughout the program. Morning, Stu. Starting this Air Force 12 weeker today. Good one. Good choice. I wanted to say thanks in advance for kicking my butt for the next 3 months. You're welcome, sir. It's a fun one. I enjoyed that one. That was fun making it. And then it also has another extra 4 weeks of the OFT. Very similar to the Navy, the new Navy PST workout I created. It's a 12-week PST program plus a 4-week HPT program, Human Performance Test program, whereas this one is 12-week IFT program and a 4-week OFT program, Initial Fitness Test, Operator Fitness Test. So the good news about patella tendonitis, and you can do some work looking up this, is heavy, slow, leg extensions on a leg extension machine is very helpful for patella tendonitis. So the way it works is you just do 10 reps, but each rep is moderately heavy, and it is a 10-second rep. So it's 5 seconds going up, 5 seconds going down. And you'll see it's pretty hard. I've had a few guys do this probably in the middle of our winter lift cycle. For some reason, they had some tendonitis that popped up, and I think they were adding some extra rucking, and they got some patella tendonitis. So leg extension, 5 seconds up, 5 seconds slow. Do that 10 times, couple of times every other day, and see if you notice a difference. But read the actual study. In fact, I'm going to help you Google it right here. Leg extensions, protocol. We'll call it a protocol for patella tendonitis. So patella tendinopathy exercise program. Yeah, there's a whole bunch of stuff in here like this. Jumper's knee. You need heavy load to fix patellar tendonitis. Yeah, this is all tons of stuff on here. In fact, I'll put this YouTube video on here. I haven't seen it, so I don't even know if it's useful, Yeah, this is good. Perfect. Yeah, I did see this one before looking it up. So check this out. This may be pretty helpful for you, but the leg extension is scientifically proven to help you with patella tendonitis. 100% proven. So just got your getting through selection spring block periodization program. Can you do a quick explanation of a 110 pull-up pyramid with the pull-ups, push-ups, sit-ups? Come on, man. Come on, Alex. It's explained in the book. But yes, it looks like this. One pull-up, two push-ups, three sit-ups. Set one. Set two, 2-4-6. Set three, 3-6-9. Set five, 5 pull-ups, 10 push-ups, 15 sit-ups. Set 10, 10-20-30. And then you come back down. 9-8-7-6-5-4-3-2-1. It's all math. So you're multiplying each set that you're on by 1, 2, or 3. You're doubling your push-ups and you're tripling your sit-ups. That is the basic PT pyramid. Been doing that since the 80s because it's so effective. In fact, I did one today. It was awesome. Do you follow any warm-up and stretching routines listed in the start of your books or use a personalized one? Oh, I do those warm-up and stretching routines in the book. Absolutely. And it's either I usually warm up with a bike or a jog, or I do that half pyramid, just like I just mentioned. So if it's an upper body day, I will typically do one pull-up, one push-up, jog 25, 30 yards, do some butt kickers, things like that. 2-2, 3-3, work my way up to 10-10 with some short jogs in between, then run a mile, and that's my warm-up. Takes about 15 minutes, but it's a good one. I mean, if you can handle 55 pull-ups and 55 push-ups and a mile run as a warm-up, that's a good warm-up. However, for some people, that's somebody's workout. And they can't get that many pull-ups or push-ups. So you could maybe cut it in half and just stop at 5 and do that and go for a run or mix it with a walk or a bike. So, you know, any of these, you know, warm-ups and books that you guys might have, they're not personalized programs. So you may need to personalize it depending on your strengths and weaknesses. You know, you could, if you're really good at push-ups, you could double your push-ups and get 110 push-ups as a warm-up. So it's all of those things need to be considered whenever you are creating doing these type of programs that are generic programs that work, but they may not work best for you unless you personalize it. And you know, you may have to adjust the running miles if you're got patella tendonitis, for instance. So there you go. I'm sure you've answered this 100 times, but thoughts on ice versus heat for joints? You know, I've used both. I like both. I will say cold is very good for inflammation. Heat is very good for warming up and getting some blood flow down there. So ice-cold contrasts are actually quite useful to, you know, work on some swelling down there, but as well as when you take it off, you can also not put heat on it and let the body's natural heating responses go to work. That's an idea. Or if you need to get it heated up fast, you can put heat on it. But, you know, there's some science out there about using ice at all now for sprains and things like that. But if it's not a sprain and you're just doing it for general recovery, I don't see a problem with it. I mean, ice baths are quite helpful. You know, you can dip your whole body into it. So, but I haven't really answered that 100 times. Not many people ask it. But if you look at new protocols for injuries, which is different than just soreness, sprains and things like that, they say don't ice it anymore. That you can elevate it, you can rest it, you can put compression on it, but not ice. Because evidently the swelling of an injury is actually the healing process, and you don't want to take out the swelling of a injured joint, and actual mobility is actually a useful tool for, as long as you can stand on it and actually move it, mobility is actually more useful than ice for injuries. Probably recovery too. Stu, the PST screener, told me that Stu's guys tend to have really bad sharking during the CSS. Whatever. They're having me change my form a lot. Do you run this critique a lot with other candidates? No. In fact, I don't teach sharking. So if you're sharking, it's not from me. So Stu's guy, that's funny. So, in fact, I try to correct sharking. Though, I will tell you this. Nobody cares when you're at Buds if you're sharking that much. You know, if you look at swim videos from Buds, guys doing their swim, you're going to see a whole bunch of elbows coming out of the water. But the PST, to get to Buds before you go to boot camp, they're a little more strict. My sharking isn't excessive. They're just very strict with my elbow barely even breaching the surface. Yeah, I wouldn't sweat it. Just keep it underwater. It's an easy fix. So for them to make such a big deal about an easy fix is kind of silly. But, you know, you got to follow the rules. Should I be doing also... Should I also be doing the core exercises listed in the Cals and Cardio book, or just follow your workouts? Are you talking about for the warm-ups? I would just follow the workouts in the chart. You know, if you want to add the core exercises, absolutely. Put them in there. I mean, I will tell you, I tend to, if I need a rest between exercises, I will do some form of core activity as a rest. I'll do crunches, sit-ups, flutter kicks, hanging knee-ups, you know, something like that, instead of just sitting down doing nothing, looking at my phone. Actually use core exercises more as a rest exercise. There used to be an old saying we used to do, like, rest with crunches, and you'd rest. 50-50 works for sure. I was at 11:15. 500-yard swim 3 weeks ago, now 940. Nice! That's huge. That's good progress. Man, another couple weeks, you'll definitely be breaking 9 for sure. Good job. I found once I achieve an 8-minute swim, the PT swim workouts and staying on pace while muscles were fatigued is what really took my swimming ability to the next level. Yeah, I would agree with that. It's all about muscle stamina. Really, you know, these PSTs, you know, building up some endurance and muscle stamina combined. That's why when I say Cals and cardio cycle are so important, because the two elements of fitness that you're really focusing on right now is cardiovascular endurance, both anaerobic and aerobic, as well as, you know, in multiple modes. So run, swim, ruck. And you do bike too if you need to lay off the impact. And calisthenics, muscle stamina, high rep stuff. You know, that is going to also help you with the overall element of fitness that you need, and that is called work capacity. So it's going to enable you to teach your body to recover quickly so you can handle more activity, you know, per day, per hour, you know, whatever the amount of time that you were doing work. You know, whenever you're not working, you're actually recovering for the next stage of work. As long as you're hydrating, electrolytes, and getting some fuel, you'll be able to recover for the next activity very well. Shout out, Stu, for critiquing my CSS back in 2019 when I was training for recon. Just want to say thanks. Oh, nice, man. Hope you did well. Good job. Glad to help. Aha, Alex. That's what I did. I knew you're busy. Yeah, not a big deal. You know. Yeah, we all hate sit-ups, but you got to do them if you're going to take a sit-up test. You don't need to do them if you're not going to take a sit-up test. But if you you want to get better at sit-ups, I personally think you need to work your hip flexors. But you also need to practice sit-ups and practice the pace of sit-ups. Where most people screw up in sit-ups in a two-minute test is they start the first 30 seconds like a bat out of hell, and they get 35, 40 in 30 seconds. Then they can't match that in the next minute and a half, and they might not even get 20. So what's that tell you? You just gassed out, right? It's like sprinting, you know, a lap of a six-lap mile and a half, your first lap, and wondering why all the other laps are slow and horrible, and you fail the run. You just started off way too fast. So pull back a little bit in those first 30 seconds and learn your pace. So I have had people not get 65 in one day, right? They take that test. They just burn themselves out, did like the 40 in the first minute and 25 in the second minute or less. Just completely burn themselves out. Didn't even get 65. Minimum standard at the Naval Academy, for instance, is 65. The next day, they come back, take the test with me. I teach them the process of pacing themselves, pull back to 20 in the first 30 seconds. They get 40 in the first minute. Now, they haven't burned out, and they can maintain that and get 20 in the next 30 seconds and 20 in the next 30 seconds. Next thing you know, they're somewhere between 70 and 80, and I did not make them stronger in 24 hours. Made them smarter in 24 hours, and they were able to do those sit-ups strictly because they paced themselves. Very similar to running and swimming. You got to learn your pace. You got to learn your pace on running mile and a half. You got to learn your pace on swimming 500 yards, yard per second. Pacing drill, that is key. But practice sit-ups at that pace. My suggestion would be do like 30-second sets and see if you can get 20 in 30 seconds and not be winded or tired. And then, you know, work on that so that's easy. And then see if you can do 40 in 1 minute. See if you can do 60 in a minute and a half. Next thing you know, you're pulling out 80 in 2 minutes. Might even be able to do 85 if you crank out that last 30 seconds because you know why? You got some juice. You can negative split it. Just like, you know, saving your last lap for a little bit faster run instead of your first one, and you can actually pick up some time, maybe save 10 seconds off that last lap. I'm getting pain after 3 pull-ups underneath my left shoulder. I believe it's rotator cuff. It's like 8 out of 10 pain stops me. I ship April 17th. Should I cut out pull-ups and hope for the best? I would not. I would go to the doctor and maybe even postpone your ship date because that's going to suck. Trying to get through that. I mean, you're talking, what, a little over 2 weeks, 2.5, 3 weeks maybe? Yeah, it looks like 3 weeks. You don't want to cut out pull-ups too much, especially if you can only do 3. I'm sure you could do more, but, you know, you don't want to do them when they're hurting. That's a tough one, man. I mean, you will get rest from pull-ups at boot camp, so you do have that going for you, but if it is an injury that requires some form of surgery, it's not going to fix itself. So my suggestion would get somebody to look at it, test it out, see if it's, in fact, do this to yourself. What, say my left shoulder, this is my left shoulder, is hurting. Take your left hand, put it on your right shoulder, and see if you can touch your elbow to your nose. See how that feels, right? Now take your knuckles of your bad shoulder, put it on your spine. And does that hurt, you know, down at your waist? And does it hurt bringing it up a little bit, like towards the middle of your back? Do those tests real quick and let me know how those feel. Are the jumping jacks in the Air Force program 4-count or just everything up, down, rep? Good question. A lot of the selection type jumping jack exercises are 4-count. Like when you're at Bud's doing jumping jacks, they're always 4-count jumping jacks. And I won't ever forget doing 1,000 4-count jumping jacks. So that means 2,000 jumping jacks. And that sucked. I mean, we had calf pain for like 4 days after that. So not that that's going to happen. We just happened to have one instructor that had this fetish with 1,000 for some reason. We did 1,000 everything. 1,000 push-ups, 1,000 sit-ups, 1,000 flutter kicks, 1,000 jumping jacks, 1,000 8-count bodybuilders. That sucked too. Though not everybody had to do that. If you're on duty and he was on duty, you got to do 1,000 8-count bodybuilders. That kind of sucked. All right. Is there an unspoken portion of Bud's where they hold you under the water until you shallow water blackout as a trust exercise? No, that is not. It's not unspoken. It's not spoken. It is not true. They do not do that. Yeah, my swimming is becoming better. Stowe program. Good. But nothing hits you harder than realizing you're not in a swimming shape as you think you are. You know what? That is very true. You know, you can be a great runner. In fact, we've had cross country guys that could kick all our butts running. And then they come to the pool with us, or a pull up bar for that matter, crush them under a pull up bar, and we crush them in the pool. And these are non-swimming athletes crushing these guys who have killer cardiovascular, but they just suck at swimming. Not necessarily poor form, just the conditioning in that, in the water, just is different. You know, there is swimming shape, there's biking shape, and there's running shape. They will help each other out to a degree. Like once I had a cross country kid, once I taught him how to swim, he became in really good swimming shape fast, right? It didn't take him very long. Just had to get used to swimming. And, you know, within a month, he was, you know, hitting all the right numbers. You know, going from zero swimming to hitting, you know, 8-minute swims pretty quickly. So it does transfer over, but it takes some time. Good question. Good comment, though. If you don't have a real dip bar and limited to a bench, would doubling the amount of chair dips be equivalent to dips in your programs? Yeah, I've had people do bench dips or chair dips. Just be careful with it because I've seen people kind of tweak their shoulder a little bit. Let me show you what I did. And I went to Amazon, typed in portable dip bars, and boom, came up with these things. And some of them are a little expensive. I bought one that was, when I say expensive, you know, do you feel like spending $70 for portable dip bars or $60 for portable dip bars? Maybe not. So I got these dip bars that, where are the ones I got? There they are. So I bought these for $59, and I'm going to share my screen with you guys, and you can kind of see what I do. I just load these up in my truck, and we get it done. So you guys see this? Black Mountain Products, heavy-duty stand. You can probably find a better deal somewhere else, but this is what we have, and it's awesome. So less than $60, you can solve your problem. Start building yourself a home gym. So there you go. I will also say the Air Force sit-up is the worst. Yeah, the one behind the head, that's an Army sit-up too. Used to be before they got rid of the PFT, which they still do the PFT in some places. So it's not completely gone. You'll do it for SFAS. You'll do it for Airborne. So you still got to learn that sit-up. It's not going away for the Spec Ops guys. Regular Navy, regular Army, regular Air Force, and even the Marine Corps have gone to plank poses. But the sit-up and crunch is still there for all the Spec Ops tests. Hey, Stu, I'm struggling with bringing down my 1.5 mile time. Former football player, power lifter. I'm with you. The good news is you're not a big football player power lifter, so that you're going to be a lot different than most. You know, usually these guys are in the 220 plus range. That's the hardest part about being a former football player and power lift. Pound for pound, you're probably really strong, and your runs and swims are going to be, you're going to get to that 9 minute mile and a half and 28 minute 4 mile much faster than a guy who has to lose 20 pounds in the process also. So keep working. It will come. You just got to learn that pace. Learn a 6 minute mile pace, learn a 7 minute mile pace. And in fact, check out this 20 mile a week running program. First, you got to build up to 20 miles a week. But this is a classic, which by the way, I'm also putting into my new Navy SEAL book, a version of this that's going to be a program similar to this. So you'll have a sprint day, a hill day, a beach day if you have beach, or you can turn it into a hill day type of thing or stairs. But check out that link in there. It's a really good one that can help you definitely improve your running quickly with those 5 or 6 run workouts a week. Let's see, in the 80s, Air Force PT jumping jacks, indeed, 4 count. Yes. Let's see here. Saw your updated Navy PST phase 1. Is gym membership required for the program? Well, you're going to need a place to swim because you're going to be swimming every day just about. Running, pull-ups. There are some weights in there, but not a whole lot that you can't. As long as you have a barbell and some dumbbells, you could probably get away with having a home gym without it. But there are some weights in there, especially with the human performance test. That's a deadlift, body weight bench press, and weighted pull-up. So a weight vest is needed. So not a whole lot of equipment is needed. Put it this way. I have a barbell with some plates, a weight vest, and a pull-up bar, and I can do every single rep in there, and some dumbbells, and I can do every single event in there along with my local swimming pool. So yes and no. And I tell you what, if you're looking at building your own home gym, everything I have in my garage has been either given to me or I found on like local Facebook pages that people are getting rid of fitness stuff all the time. All the time. I just got lucky and found some bumper plates and, you know, for almost nothing. They were just getting rid of them. You know, just basically bring a truck and pick them up for me and they're yours type of stuff, which was awesome. So you might be able to find some things like that, save some money. Any tips, any performance advice for knot tying instructors, knotting the hose portion of phase 2, any tips for untying whammy knots? Not really. I mean, those things you're going to be able to practice when you're there with everybody. I don't recommend doing any of that stuff prior to it, though you should know all your knots and be able to tie them all on land. Tie them to another rope. That's a big one because there'll be a rope at the bottom of the pool and you got to tie a square knot, a clove hitch, a right angle knot, a bowline, and a Beckett's bend. Those five knots. So you, if you Google those or go to YouTube even and search those knots, you'll find some great videos showing you how to tie them. So practice them all on dry land first, then practice them with a buddy, maybe holding a rope, and you go under 4 or 5 feet, tie it, do it like that on a breath hold. It's not that hard. You might be able to do it in 20 seconds holding your breath. Got a few more questions, then I got to bail. I'm the Complete Guide Navy SEAL Fitness book. There's a run workout that says 3 miles run, 1.5 mile sprint, 1.5 mile jog. Does that mean 6 miles? No. Sorry, that's not a stupid question. Probably could have been written better on my part. It's basically 3 mile run that you break up into 2 half-mile events. One's fast, one's a jog. And when I say sprint, no one really sprints 1.5 miles, but you do it as fast as you can at the pace that may be unsustainable for you, right? So let's say you're not quite at a 9-minute mile pace, or 9-minute mile and a half. So a 6-minute mile pace. Let's say you're hitting 6:15s for your mile pace. So that gives you, I don't know, what's that? Maybe a 9:30, somewhere around there. Maybe a little less. But you want to try to hit a 9. So try to start off that run at that 6-minute mile pace and see how long you can handle it and keep track of that. You know, can you make a 6-minute mile? Do you lose it on your 5th or 6th lap? You know, things like that. That's good feedback for you on where you need to maybe adjust your training. So instead of doing a whole bunch of 400s, maybe you start doing mile repeats or mix in a few 800s instead of 400s, back-to-back type of stuff. So, but that's a good little assessment tool for you to figure out, you know, where you're falling off your pace. What's your opinion continuing with martial arts training, boxing? Wondering if it's worth the risk. It is not worth the risk. I can't tell you how many people who have either one of two things. They either delayed their training because they were injured, or they got disqualified because they were so injured that they were now medically disqualified to join. So it is absolutely not worth it. We had one of our guys do Muay Thai, broke his shin. Still having problems with it. He has shin splints now on that one leg right where he broke his leg. Might even be a stress fracture. So that has delayed him another 6 to 8 months easy. Right? He's been nursing that thing forever. Unable to run for 6 months. What's that do to your training program? Annihilates it. He had a broken fist, couldn't do any upper body PT for 6 months, had to get surgery on his hand. But that goes for triathlons too. You know, we got guys that like to do triathlons and they're riding bikes, you know, along with traffic. Next thing you know, they get hit by a car, wreck on their bike going 20 miles an hour. That doesn't work well. Dislocated shoulders, concussions, you know, all of those things aren't worth the risk. So my advice would be 6 months out from when you're planning on shipping, stop the stupid stuff. You can pick it up once you're in the teams again. Putting my knuckles on my spine is doable, but I feel tightness in my shoulder, elbow to nose is doable. Not so much tightness. I'm going Army, by the way. Okay, gotcha. Yeah, either way, the good news about the Army is that you have a significant amount of time to heal, but your Army boot camp is going to be a lot harder than the Navy boot camp. You're going to be doing a lot more PT. You'll be doing running. You'll be rucking. You may feel it, you know, when you're rucking. That's another question for you. Do you feel it when you ruck? on that shoulder, or is it only during pull-ups? So, you know, that was only two tests. You know, whenever you go see a physical therapist, they may roll you through a couple of different tests to see how, you know, like thumbs up, thumbs down, you know, what hurts. Another one to do is do that lightweight shoulder workout. In fact, I'll put a link into it and tell me which one hurts you. You can just email me this if we're not on after you do this. But do this with a 5-pound dumbbell and let me know which one hurts you. It's probably going to be the thumbs down, you know, or maybe even thumbs up out in front, depending on which muscle or tendon is a little tight in there. But it sounds like more of a tendonitis than it does, you know, like a separation, which is more like a sprain. A dislocation, if you think you dislocated it, that could be a whole different animal with labrum tears and things like that. All right, we got one more question. Matthew, you're it. One more question. One of the running workouts says 3-mile. Didn't we just do this one? Yeah, we just answered that one. So, yes, same question three times. Okay, well, I guess we're done. Because I got to go. I got to write an article. I'm going to write an article on spring training and that process of maybe changing out from your winter lift cycle into a, you know, more running calisthenic cycle to be a little more well-rounded in your tactical training programming. But it also depends on your weaknesses. You know, I have some guys that are not doing a running progression because they need to stay in the weight room, i.e. cross-country runners who are 150 and never lift weights, or swimmers who can't run that much because they start breaking their shins. So it really, you know, a lot of this stuff depends. If you ever have a question on what might be the right one for you, just email me. You know, happy to answer some questions for you. So just my email address is right here in this little banner down here, stu@stusmith.com. Oop, stu@stusmith.com right there. Yep. So, let me know. So tomorrow we'll talk about the combat swimmer stroke. Send some videos in. I got a bunch of them already lined up for it. And if you're looking for what kind of videos that I critique, go to either my TikTok page at StuSmith50 or go to my reels over at Instagram, StuSmith50, and you'll see what kind of videos I need, like someone holding a camera walking alongside of you. Send it to me for 50 yards and I will critique it for you. Happy to do that. Makes a big difference. A lot of people don't know that they're doing stuff wrong. And I tell you what happens a lot, once they see themselves swimming and then compare it to other videos on those channels, they're like, this doesn't look like anything that he's trying to teach. And by the way, I don't teach high elbow stuff. I don't know where it's Stu's, guys. That's bull. Blaming it on me. So, all right. Well, I will chat with you guys later. You guys have a good one. Give me some likes down there and come back tomorrow. I will see you later.